On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is currently overhauling its decades-old unemployment system. Software to process unemployment claims that dates back to the 70s, and a complete overhaul is estimated to cost upwards of $80 million. How do you think state officials should change Wisconsin's unemployment system? What ideas do you support? What is the status of your unemployment claim? What have you experienced in the system? 800-642-1234. Amy Pahachuk is Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Secretary Pahachuk, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, let's start with those upgrades. The governor setting aside this money, federal pandemic relief dollars for the upgrades. What fixes are the highest priority? What is underway?
Yes. So, you know, you had already mentioned that the department was hamstrung with that really old technology going into the pandemic. And I just have to remind you and our listeners what that truly meant. So when I got to the department in September of 2020, I mean, I was shocked to learn that we were administering millions of claims. I mean, literally distributing billions of dollars off a 1970s mainframe COBOL system. And Kate, we are talking, you know, the black screen with the green blinky cursor where you have to use the F keys to navigate between the screens. I mean, it was shocking. And the other thing back in September of 2020 that I was totally shocked to learn when I got to the department is that if claimants had to send in documentation to verify their claim eligibility, they had two mechanisms to do so. They could either mail it or they could fax it into the department. And of course, I'm sure you're imagining then our mailroom with mountains of papers that our employees had to do manual data entry. And if you had a question when you were a claimant back in September of 2020 about your claim, you had to call our call center and schedule an interview time with your claims handler. Again, not efficient or, you know, flexible at all in terms of being responsive to the folks in our state. And I think you might also remember this from an audit, but our call center had very limited capacity. Mm-hmm. It had to shut down at 5:30 p.m. every day because our mainframe system needed to begin batching and processing those millions of checks, that really old system. So what we've done in the past year is really focused on improving customer service for the folks in our state. We have done an entire claimant portal upload and upgrade system where folks can now go on and upload documents either by their laptop or their cell phone, and it's mobile friendly. We now have the option for folks to communicate electronically with their claims handler. There's secure messaging, there's text alerts. We have implemented automation on the back end where there's no longer weeks and weeks of manual data entry once we have those documents. And then last week, we announced our partnership with Flexion, mm-hmm. which is a Wisconsin-based company, to really upgrade the heart of the system, which is that 1970s mainframe. We are going to be moving that to the cloud in modern code so that we can be more responsive to standing up new programs, changes to the law, where we won't have to wait months and months and months to program an old system where folks just have to wait for benefits. So all of that we are very excited about. And one last thing I should mention, Kate, in terms of modernization, we did go live last week with phase one of our brand new modern call center, also moving that to the cloud to increase capacity. And by February, we will have the ability for folks to access real-time claim information 24/7, 365, you know, anytime, Christmas Day, a Sunday, anytime folks need that information, it'll be available online through our new portal or through the phone. So we are just really excited about all of these huge improvements we've been able to make in just 1 year.
So, yeah, so some of those fax machines, I would imagine, are being retired. You know, when you took over at DWD, you brought in more contractors, you mandated employee overtime pay, you partnered with Google to bring analytics to the UI claims system. With all three of these things, you know, underway, will that be business as usual once you get your new system up and running in years to come?
Yeah, so we are really gaining lots of efficiencies, obviously, through the modernization. And you referenced our partnership with Google to clear that backlog back in 2020. Wisconsin is really being recognized as a national and even global leader for innovative thinking with that partnership. So we are very excited about that. We continue to partner with Google throughout this modernization effort. And really what we're finding in terms of business as usual is that since we've put some of these sort of short-term initial modernization steps in place, folks are now on average receiving their benefits within 2 to 3 business days. And if there are questions about their eligibility and they need to get sent to a claims handler for further review, that's happening on average right now within 10 days. So we are really, again, looking at moving forward in a customer service, customer-centric model where we want folks to be able to have the best access to these benefits with the least amount of hoops to jump through. One other thing that I just want to mention too that we did this past year, we found that a lot of folks got tripped up when they were applying for unemployment because the application itself was very difficult.
You called it jargony with legalese. Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. So that's your spot on, Kate. And so what we did is we hired a contractor and we transitioned that entire application into plain language. We also got feedback from claimants, from the public, from the legislature, from our stakeholders for questions they thought were particularly difficult. And we really tried to make it as intuitive and easy to follow as possible. And we've definitely seen an ease of folks going through the system now that it's in plain language. And we're going to continue that effort going forward. We want the entire website and all of the claimant handbooks and everything else to be in plain language. The idea here is not to cause more difficulty for folks when they're in their time of need, but to really make this a user-friendly system.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Wisconsin's unemployment system with Amy Pahacik, Secretary Designee of the State Department of Workforce Development. How do you think state authorities should change Wisconsin's unemployment system? What ideas do you support? What has your experience been with unemployment? 800-642-1234. I want to talk about appeals because your data, your weekly data shows average wait times for a hearing now is between like 54, 55 days. What is your department doing about this backlog and this wait time?
Yeah, so pre-pandemic, well, I think we should just let appeals, just so everybody's familiar, if somebody goes through the application process and is denied access to benefits because they're deemed not to qualify under state statute or the program rules, they have a due process right to appeal that and get a hearing in front of a judge. And so pre-pandemic, the department had 17 judges. And of course, with the avalanche of claims that we had, almost 5 years worth of claims in 1 year, the amount of appeals, also skyrocketed. And so we have staffed up. We now have approximately 65 judges. So we've increased our capacity there to hear appeals significantly. And we've actually just hired 8 additional judges. So 54 days is unacceptable. It's a long wait, but the Department of Labor indicates that those hearings should occur within 45 days. So we are not entirely all that far off. And in fact, 48 out of the 50 states right now are in the same boat as Wisconsin, just outside of that timeliness factor for those hearings. So we have about 10,000 in the queue right now to be scheduled out. Really, we need to get around 7,000 to hit timeliness and to continue to move through those. So we anticipate being there in a matter of weeks.
Along those lines, what is a reasonable number of days from when a claim comes in the door to when a benefit is paid? Right now it's looking 37 days. What are you shooting for?
Yeah, so that's the average, which includes those outliers that have to go to hearing and have to have investigations with interviews and employers. We are shooting for as soon as possible, and the majority of our folks right now are receiving their benefits within 2 to 3 business days of applying. So we feel that, of course, we will always continue to strive upon moving that sooner, but that is a pretty decent turnaround time right now.
Workforce Development Secretary Designee Amy Pahachik with us, led the agency for more than a year. We're discussing the challenges in delivering workforce services and unemployment assistance programs in the pandemic. Have you tried calling the unemployment benefit hotline? Did you file your unemployment claim online? How well did these systems work for you? 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap in a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Workforce Development Secretary Designee Amy Pahachik. Over the summer, we saw Governor Evers earmark $130 million in federal pandemic aid for workforce initiatives, helping connect unemployed Wisconsinites with job prospects, with addressing the shortage of workers. What is the return on investment for these programs? What has helped you get back on your feet after pandemic-related job loss? 800-642-1234 to join in. Secretary Pahachik is with us for about 9 more minutes. I want to turn to the new Republican-backed bill that would bring a variety of changes to our state's unemployment benefit system. Drug testing for claimants, payments for businesses that hire long-term claimants, mandates to apply for certain jobs while receiving benefits. What do you think of the proposal?
Yeah, Kate. So, I mean, the fact is the Department of Workforce Development is already performing many of the key functions called for in the proposal. And we're quite honestly delivering exceptional results for job seekers, employers, and employees in our state. And just by way of quick example, the existing Reemployment Services and Eligibility Assessment Program currently serves between 20 to 25,000 unemployment claimants each year. And this program itself includes an employment plan, job search assistance, work search review, employment counseling with licensed career counselors, referrals to training programs, and career exploration. We've got around 90,000 active resumes on our job center right now, and we're hosting career fairs, hiring events, working with our educational partners on training, and working with employers to recruit candidates in all of the industries across the state. I mean, and that includes other things like registered apprenticeship, internships, working with folks with disabilities, veterans. I could go on and on. So we understand, you know, the proposal adds some additional reporting requirements and some additional bureaucratic layers of paperwork with no real sustainable funding that would, you know, help us achieve those goals. But certainly we are always interested in improving our operations and work routinely with elected officials, stakeholders, folks of the public, you know, for any ideas we have to improve. So, you know, we will continue those conversations and see if there are things that we can, you know, embrace with that proposal and move forward.
Yeah, but just to spend a moment here, your department has significant concerns about the anticipated reporting burden for employers. What is the reporting burden that you would see here?
So, I mean, the proposal has additional requirements for employers to report, you know, with who they're talking to, who they're hiring. There was also the drug testing reporting, and it just was going to be a lot of systems we'd have to incorporate, additional data to collect. And it's really important at this time, as we're continuing to recover from the pandemic, that we're flexible and nimble and able to connect folks as quickly as possible.
I want to turn to benefit levels, because enhanced unemployment benefits from the federal government ended at the beginning of September. And we've talked in the past about Wisconsin's benefit rates from $54 to $370 a week. And even though the unemployment rate is down from earlier in the pandemic, would you support hiking the state's maximum benefit rates?
Absolutely. I encourage everybody to look at unemployment, not just in the lens of giving an individual a stipend to carry them through until they land on their feet for their next job, but also as an economic stabilizer for communities and businesses. What folks do when they receive unemployment is they turn that into consumer spending. And we know that our unemployment rate has not kept up with average wages or the CPI. So certainly it is something that just helps individuals get back on their feet. I mean, remember too, one of the eligibility requirements for receiving unemployment in our state is that folks have to be laid off due to no fault of their own. So these are individuals who have found themselves in a situation that they didn't anticipate. And so that money keeps food on the table, it keeps roofs over their heads, and it keeps money flowing into local economies. So I certainly would support an increase in that.
Could you throw out a number? What would you support?
Well, the governor did include an increase in his budget proposal this year. So certainly the governor recognizes the importance of this as well. I don't recall off the top of my head, Kate, what that number was, but certainly an increase is warranted.
You know, new jobs data is due out from the Labor Department this week. We'll be watching. But in August, Wisconsin lost 8,200 private sector jobs and over 10,000 non-farm jobs, albeit our unemployment rate did hold steady at 3.9%. What do you attribute the slowdown of job growth to?
I mean, there are a lot of different factors going on right now. And I know, Kate, it sounds like you're referring to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics JOLTS report. Mm-hmm. And we are looking at, again, a very interesting time in national and local economics here. So we know jobs have been lost. We suspect there's still a sort of disproportionate impact in hospitality and restaurant work. We know that a lot of employers are still having a hard time filling vacancies. And we have seen in our state and nationally, lots of individuals leaving their previous occupation to choose a different road. It's been referred to as the Great Resignation. And I think a lot of these factors, including the Delta variant, have had very interesting impacts on the economy, the labor force, and the job market. And you are correct. So Wisconsin is at a 3.9% unemployment rate. Pre-pandemic, we were at 3.2%. And we are really in the top 10 in the nation for lowest unemployment rates. We've bounced back and we bounced back quickly, but there are still challenges in our workforce, certainly.
We're talking with Amy Pahacik, Secretary Designee of the State Department of Workforce Development. I want to just spend a moment, help me with some numbers on overtime paid out, because the Unemployment Insurance Division spent more than $1 million through September of last year in employee overtime, which was 10 times the levels spent in 2019. What does your overtime pay look like rounding out 2021?
Well, we certainly still have had overtime. Again, as we continue to process higher than average and higher than even historically ever seen in our department amounts of claims, we continue to strive to do that as quickly as possible. And so, yes, we have folks that are working extra hours. We have folks that are working on weekends, and we are doing this in service to the people of our state. So those numbers, although they are high, we are receiving a significant amount of federal funding. All of our modernization efforts are being funded through federal money. And so we feel that the overtime is money well spent in service to the people waiting for these benefits.
Why did it take so long to choose to go use federal pandemic relief funds for these updates?
Oh, it didn't take long at all. We were simply waiting for the federal ARPA, which is the American Rescue Plan Act, stipulations about how the money could be used. And as soon as we received clearance to use the money that was afforded to our state for unemployment, the governor immediately put aside the $80 million needed to ensure that this very important project was completed. So as soon as we had the money, Kate, it was put aside and dedicated to this effort.
Let's go to Jim now in Johnson Creek, who is a construction worker. Jim, hi. What is your situation?
Hello?
Hi, Jim. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay. Thank you for taking the call. Yes. So I'm a construction worker, and I, you know, regularly get a winter layoff. There are times where I can find a job that will take me for just winter employment, but a lot of times I end up having to depend on unemployment. Unfortunately, you know, with all these jobs I get, and, you know, because it changes up with construction and, like I said, winter work, that I see a lot of people that will play the system by getting a job just long enough to get their unemployment and then get themselves laid off or fired. I was wondering, do you have any kind of a red flag thing going on in your system to kind of earmark these people? But
and Jim, we're short on time. Let's get the secretary to respond.
Yeah, Jim, we certainly have lots of fraud techniques and tools in place. What you're talking about doesn't necessarily, I don't know, amount to fraud if they're following the eligibility rules set in statute, but we do have lots of auditing, lots of fraud protection, and lots of other red flags in which we're monitoring information that folks enter into the system.
Secretary Pahacik, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Amy Pahacik, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Stay with us. State Capitol Report continues with Randy Romanski, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is home to more than 64,000 farms spread across over 14 million acres with nearly 1.3 million cows. That's from the USDA's 2020 overview data. Agriculture, it is front and center to the work of the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. But it's an agency that has a hand in a wide variety of other things, business trade practices, identity theft, food safety, to name a few. What should the department's leader know? It's 800-642-1234. Randy Romanski is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Secretary Romanski, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Great. Thank you for having me. It's good to be with you this morning.
Good to be with you. You know, Wisconsin has been leading the nation in farm bankruptcies. Our state is battling runoff from ag, climate change. What are the biggest challenges you see facing farmers?
Well, most recently, and we've all had to react to it. It's affected us all, but COVID-19 has had a dramatic impact on agriculture and farmers, like it has on the rest of us. And the economic disruptions that have gone along with it have been and continue to be a challenge in some different ways. But I guess I would start off by saying that agriculture is part of Wisconsin's past, present, and future, and it's $104.8 billion industry in the state of Wisconsin. It's an economic strength for our state. One in nine people currently working in the state of Wisconsin is in a job related to agriculture. So while agriculture is an industry has struggles as any industry does at times, it continues to be a strong economic driver for our state.
Well, let's look at those struggles and specifically small family farms that have struggled with that choice of either getting big or, you know, not competing with high production farms or sell out and get out of the business because you can't make ends meet as a small farmer. How do you approach that question with small family farms who are experiencing that?
Well, I think the one of the economic opportunities in the state, and it's been here for many years, is that Wisconsin has tremendous diversity in its farms and the kinds of farmers we have. We have large, medium, and small farmers. We have people who do cash crop, livestock, dairy, specialty crops. We are a leader in so many different kinds of production in the state. And there have been economic challenges facing farmers, and there's a tremendous amount of stress that goes with being a farmer. I think one of the things that we look at is as farmers face this decision about how they operate into the future, it's important that we want all sizes of farms, all different types of farms to be successful. So one of the things that you talked about is how many farms we have and dairy farms. We still have we have more than 20% of all dairy farms in the entire United States right here in Wisconsin. And our average herd size, having that many farms, is still, I think, just a little bit south of 200. That means we have farms of all sizes, from the very large to very small. And our goal is to have them all be successful in the state of Wisconsin.
You know, labor shortages have hit other industries, and you need people to milk the cows, you need to feed the livestock, work the fields, process and deliver orders. How is the egg industry in Wisconsin finding workers?
Well, the egg industry is like any other industry right now, and there are challenges finding workforce, whether it's food production, processing, working in the fields. It's been a challenge. And I guess one of the things that we as an agency have tried to do is work with the industry and just continue to talk about the opportunities that are out there. You may be familiar with it, but we have a couple of programs that we have targeted here at the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection to focus on the future workforce, current and future workforce, but two in particular take the long-term approach of looking at what's available now, and what kind of jobs are available in the future. We have an Ag Youth Council where we have incoming high school seniors or high school seniors working with us. We have monthly meetings with them, and we talk about job opportunities, the future of Wisconsin, making connections in agriculture, things of that nature. We want the best and brightest minds in our state to be thinking about what their future in agriculture looks like. We've also worked with the Department of Workforce Development on something called the Agriculture Education and Workforce Development Council, which is hoping to structure paths for people to join the industry at a variety of levels. They may decide to work on the farm, but there are also processing jobs, there's transportation jobs, there's accounting jobs. Opportunities are endless, and the needs are certainly there.
But finding people interested in farm jobs, I mean, this is long hours, labor intensive. And then when McDonald's or Walmart down the street is paying more, how do you entice people to work on the farm?
I think the important thing to focus on is the contribution that is being made by agriculture to the local community, to the state's economy. And I think there needs to be a focus on the entire gamut of what's available in agriculture, because we are talking partly about, you know, milking the cows or working on the farm. But again, there's applicators, there's people who work in transportation processing. There's a wide range of jobs available, and there clearly is a need.
Well, you know, some farmers rely on the federal program called H-2A, offering workers seasonal visas to work in ag. How is that program working out for Wisconsin farmers?
It's clearly a program that is welcomed by farmers in the state. I think access to labor is important, and I think every opportunity we have to be supportive of the industry as they work to utilize that, access that program for additional employees is a good thing to be supportive of.
How do you feel about the Farm Workforce Modernization Act that's working through Congress, passed the House in March? It would address concerns with the H-2A program. How would this legislation affect Wisconsin?
I'm not familiar with all the details of the legislation, and obviously we'll have to see what ultimately passes. So it's difficult to speculate on what might happen or what might be in the final version. But I can just say that it's really important for the industry to have access to a skilled, dedicated workforce. And if that legislation ultimately helps with that regard, then I think it's something that will be a benefit to agriculture.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Randy Romanski. His position was confirmed by the State Senate last month. You can join in. What do you think should be the top priorities at the agency? What should the department's leader know? Do you work as a meat processor or meat inspector? Do you feel supported? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Matt from Wausau writes in to ask, how has the emergence in the last couple decades of CAFOs, these farms with over about 700 cows, how has it affected small family farms? And have these large factory farms affected the environment? And as a note here, I'll say, you know, CAFOs have increased by 55% in less than a decade.
Matt, thanks for that question. We do hear this from time to time, and I guess I'll go back to something I mentioned on the front end, is that in Wisconsin, one of the important parts and strength of the agriculture industry is that there's not a focus on which size of operation should happen. That's ultimately a decision that's made by the individual business. And again, ultimately, in Wisconsin, we need farms of all sizes to be successful, small, medium, and large. And it's important that that we have that diverse strength in Wisconsin.
You mentioned COVID hitting family farms hard. What is the debt situation like for our farmers in this pandemic?
I'm sorry, did you say debt?
D-E-B-T? The debt, yes, the okay. debt situation. Yeah, yeah, because, you know, we have led the nation in farm bankruptcies, and you mentioned that COVID is hitting family farms particularly hard.
Clearly, again, and COVID's had a dramatic impact on everybody and on the economy. Agriculture is no different, and farmers clearly have felt stress over the last several years. We have something that's called the Wisconsin Farm Center right here at the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and they provide resources to farmers, and they have these challenging conversations with farmers about debt load and what their potential future plan might be, and mitigating financial issues. We also have programs at the Farm Center to help with try to get resources to farmers. And we appreciate Governor Evers taking such a strong position to get funding for farmer mental health programming in the state. We have 24/7 hotline. We have counselors that are ready to help. And we have a dedicated staff here, many of whom have a financial background to have conversations with farmers. The Farm Center has mental health vouchers available. And what we can say is that the last 2 years have been relatively consistent in the number of vouchers that that we've seen farmers access. And in fact, they're higher over the last couple of years than they've been in the last 10 years. But what we're also seeing is that when farmers request a voucher, they're much more likely to actually use the voucher, which means, number one, the need is there, and number two, they're finding the resources that we have available to them. That hasn't always been the case in the past. So the important thing is that we make resources available to farmers so that they can access them as they need them.
Yeah, what would you say is the return on investment for these programs and resources? What is working at the Farm Center that you can really see results?
Well, I will talk a little bit about the Farmer Mental Health program in that over the last 2 years. So last year, there were 229 vouchers issued in the state of Wisconsin, and like I said, about 77% of those were redeemed. The year before, there were 223. The year before that, 153. The year before that, 39. So there's been a dramatic increase in the number of farmer mental health vouchers issued. But again, the important thing is that there's more farmers using that resource. I guess you know, the other kinds of things that I would say is our farm center staff is extremely dedicated. They spend lots of time working with farmers to try to mitigate some of the financial circumstances that they're experiencing at any given time. So it's really kind of difficult to put a metric on that kind of human capital that they're doing, but they have a lot of success stories, and success can take many different forms. It could be everything from they changed their finances a little bit and they are in a better financial state right now, or it could be that they've chosen to take a different direction and modified the type of operation they might have. And in some cases, the farmer might transition out and transition the farm to somebody else. So there's a lot of different paths.
Yeah,
a lot of different scenarios that you see.
Well, let's pause there with State Agriculture Secretary Randy Romanski, who is with us on the latest developments in the agency that oversees and provides services to Wisconsin agriculture, consumers, businesses. Have you taken advantage of grants awarded to farmers in Wisconsin? What was that experience like? What questions do you have about how the state is cracking down on identity theft or managing the Do Not Call registry? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In August, Governor Evers directed an additional $50 million in direct payments to support farm operations hit hard in the pandemic, as we've been talking about. He announced another round of the Wisconsin Farm Support Program in August. In total, the governor has directed more than $100 million from federal pandemic aid to boost farmers. Join in your experiences, 800-642-1234. Randy Romanski is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection with us for about six more minutes. Let's go to Pompeo joining us from Toma. Hi, Pompeo. Go ahead.
Good morning. So I see that organic farmers have somewhat of a penalty to be certified. They have to pay $900+ and a percentage of their income, and also that you have to know all the pesticides that they use and everything, herbicides. And conventional farmers get a lot more subsidies, and they don't have to tell you what kind of pesticides, herbicides, fungicides they use. And that just seems a little bit unfair. I think there should be more support for organic farmers getting certified and a little bit more regulation so that we know what kind of pesticides are going into our food and what kind of practices are in the food that we're eating. Thank you very much.
Pompeo, thank you. So regulation and transparency, Secretary Romanski.
Well, I'll say this. We're really fortunate in Wisconsin, and we lead in so many things, and which, again, speaks to that diversity we've been talking about and the strength of our ag economy. Wisconsin is the second largest organic state, or the number two organic state in the United States, and in a strong way. We have a variety of organic producers all across the state, and we're fortunate for that because I think it's another way to look at the economy and another way to farm. As far as the standards that occur and what has to happen, of course, there are guidelines that are set at the federal level to try and have some uniformity in what those standards look like. And again, obviously, Wisconsin farmers are finding a tremendous opportunity to choose that route if that's what they think is best for their bottom line. It does take time and it takes effort, but we're fortunate we have an organic advisory council that is attached to our agency to try to give us input about the industry along the way.
So how would the advisory council be helping to even the playing field between conventional farming and organic farms and getting more organic farms up and running?
I guess the one thing that we benefit from is getting them in the room and listening to the kinds of things that they would have to say. about that. The other thing that I would say is we should look at opportunities to support that that industry whenever possible. In Governor Evers' last budget, he proposed a variety of measures to support the agriculture industry, many of which were included and ultimately had some bipartisan support. But there were some programs that he recommended putting in place to try to bolster the organic and small farm diversity program, small farm diversity that's out there, that ultimately didn't get included in the final version of the budget. But what I would say is this is an opportunity for us to continue to have conversations about that. And I think the Organic Advisory Council can help guide some of our thoughts on that.
Pompeo, thanks for the call as we talk with Randy Romanski, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Let's go to Chris now in Bessemer, Michigan. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my phone call. So I do live in Bessemer, just over the Wisconsin border, and northern Wisconsin, as you know, is known for its many supper clubs. And just recently, my husband was saying to me he felt like the cost of steak was getting too high, even for a luxury meal. And I was just wondering, and you had already brought up, you know, the trickle-down effect of agriculture and how it affects the Wisconsin economy as a whole. Is the industry doing anything to further market the importance of supporting local agriculture in terms of trickle-down effects?
Chris, thank you. Secretary Romanski.
Oh, Chris, thank you for asking that question. I think we could talk for another half hour or more about that issue alone. I'll try and condense it because it's an excellent question. What you're experiencing with the cost of a good steak at a great Wisconsin supper club is one of those supply chain issues that we talk about. And the disruptions in the supply chain have happened, and that's caused some of the scarcity of things for a while. It affected farm prices for a while, and now in some cases it may affect availability. And you may see it in a store where you go to a grocery store and it'll say, you know, we have fewer items of this available because they didn't arrive. So we still see some of those supply chain disruptions. Well, so what is the industry doing? Here's what I can say. It's a longer term approach. What we have is a lot of livestock, a lot of animals that are waiting to be processed because the processing capacity hasn't kept up. Now, part of that was because of some of the plants closing down during COVID-19, but that issue was around even before COVID-19 hit. It's just been exacerbated by the pandemic. What we need to do is increase the supply chain from the production side. And Governor Evers proposed in his budget a three-pronged plan to do that. Number one, meat processing grants to help plants modernize and expand if they want to. Number two, going back to this labor discussion that we talked about earlier, Kate, a talent development program to encourage people to enter the meat processing workforce and provide tuition assistance to do so. And step number three, making sure that the state has enough meat inspectors so that we can work with the industry. Because if we don't have an inspector present when processing is going on, they can't process, they can't slaughter. So those are really, it's a three-point plan of what we're doing. The good news is some of those items were included in the governor's budget. In fact, I'm going before the Joint Finance Committee tomorrow to request the funding that Governor Evers included in his budget for meat processing grants. And we hope to get those out the door to help with that supply chain. We've also gotten four of the six meat inspectors that the governor requested. So that's a three-step approach to try to address that. And hopefully we'll see that supply chain ease.
Well, Secretary Romanski, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Randy Romanski, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. This is the Ideas Network.